Welcome to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. It's time that I faced it. Big arts institutions will never be as rowdy as I wish they could. They're too organized, too sterile, too controlled. The politics of whose work should be displayed and for how long, obligations to large donors to showcase their personal collections. And because of all of that and more, MoMAs just aren't as weird and as wild as I'd hoped they'd be. But in the audio world, that's starting to change. The Getty, the Smithsonian Museum of American Art, the National Gallery, and the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art all have podcasts with prime directives to explore the artistic wilderness beyond their organization's walls. SF MoMA's podcast, Raw Material, doesn't just explore that wilderness, they're also celebrating it within every episode. Each season, SF MoMA partners with a different podcaster in residence to explore modern and contemporary art through the sounds and voices of artists working here in the Bay Area. They've just launched their second season titled Manifest, wherein host Geraldine Osu explores the intersections of social justice, community, and art. The six-episode season gives listeners an intimate look into multiple artists' practices and the personal stories and politics that they carry with them and bring into their artworks. I can't think of a better place to start SF MoMA's Manifest season than with their episode titled The Home.
This is Raw Material, an arts and culture podcast by SF MoMA. I'm your host, Geraldine Osu, for a season about art, community, and social justice. Up next on Raw Material.
What if this place didn't have a wall? What would it look like? What would it feel like?
Home is not always safe. Some of the most tragic things happen in the home.
I was living in the shadows completely. Not even my best friends knew about my status.
We're talking about art and the home. Art is a refuge, a landing, to rest, to restore, to question. Que nada ni nadie escase. Si nadie es eterno. Nada. I've searched for the meaning of home my whole life. A first-generation daughter of parents born on an island in the Indian Ocean, my hair is dark, my skin is fair, and my mother tongue is a French patois, itself the inheritance of a colonial past. I grew up in the U.S., eating hot dogs and rice, pleading for pizza, and pickling cabbage with my mother at the kitchen table. I straddled cultural lines that often made me wish I was born in another skin. Who am I? And where do I belong?
I am invisible, understand, simply because people refuse to see me. Like the bodiless heads you see sometimes in circus sideshows. It is as though I have been surrounded by mirrors of hard, distorting glass. When they approach me, they see only my surroundings. Themselves are figments of their imagination. Indeed, everything and anything except me. Ralph Ellison, Invisible Man.
I'm meeting with mixed media sculptor and Bay Area legend Mildred Howard. She's an older African-American woman. Her hair is long and dreaded, and she's wearing a bright purple shirt and red lipstick. She greets me at the door, warmly, and offers me tea and coffee. It feels like she's inviting me into her home. But this is not her house.
I have all this stuff. Not only things that I've made, but things that I'm going to make things out of. And so it's like 40 years of stuff that I'm packing from place to place.
Howard's been making art for decades. Her studio is, well, was based in Berkeley, California, where she grew up. In fact, her childhood home was a mere 2.5 blocks away. But like so many places in the Bay Area, the neighborhood is changing. After 18 years in her studio, Howard has been priced out. Her rent suddenly doubled, and now she's in the process of moving. We're actually recording this interview at her friend's house. But her neighborhood wasn't always so expensive.
South Berkeley is a community. When my family moved there, that was redlined.
During World War II, more than 5 million African Americans relocated from the South to major industrial cities in the North, as well as west of the Mississippi. So cities like Oakland, Richmond, and San Francisco, places where the naval shipyards were booming, they saw a huge influx of African American families that were looking to escape the Jim Crow South and start again. But racism, as it turns out, is everywhere. Banks began denying services to Black families, shutting them out of the market to keep white neighborhoods white. This practice of redlining is ostensibly what kept cities racially segregated. But life, as it does, continued, and folks made a home for themselves. Howard's family eventually settled in South Berkeley.
It was a real community, and there were things to support that community. There were, grocery stores, two banks, bakeries, restaurants, cleaners. My mother was friends with the grocery store owners. They knew our parents. We played with their kids. Everything you needed was right there in that community.
As people of color started settling down, white families began to flee, moving to the suburbs, a phenomenon known as white flight. But over time, trends began to change, values started to shift, and priorities started to get rearranged. Suddenly, the city started to look pretty good again, and those who had once left now wanted back in.
And next thing you know, it's an all-white neighborhood again.
One of the ironies of the situation is that Howard is an artist well known around the world for her installations of houses made of glass.
I started building these glass houses as a result of working at the Exploratorium. And we were looking at light going through, the physical aspects of it, how when you look through a clear object, what kind of shadow does it create, and how light transmits and reflects. But as I was working in that area, I began to realize that it had other metaphors.
Have you ever walked by someone's yard and seen a tree with bottles on its branches? You might have seen these in the South, states like Texas and South Carolina. They're sometimes called bottle trees. Thought to have originated in Africa, the story goes that bottle trees are actually protectors of the home. They ward off evil spirits by luring them with their colored glass and playful shadows. Mesmerized, the evil spirit has no choice but to follow the light into the bottle, where it's then trapped, never to escape again. And if you ever hear the wind blowing against the mouth of the bottle, that's how you know you've caught one.
I had been reading James Weldon Johnson's autobiography of an ex-colored man. And in doing that, he talked about the bottles in the front yard being stuck neck down to keep the bad spirits away.
Sometimes bottles would be stuck in the dirt instead.
Anyway, he proceeded to dig these bottles up, because he wanted to know if the bottles grew like the flowers did. And I just loved that part of that book. So the next day I said, I think I'll do a house out of bottles. And that's how my use of glass began.
Howard's created many glass houses, some small, some big. In 2011, she created a glass house which stood at 10 feet high and 12 feet wide. Supported by a light wooden frame, she arranged thousands of large and small clear bottles to create the panels for the house, which, once completed, stood outside, under the sun, in front of the Palo Alto City Hall building. And depending on the time of day, or even the time of year, it could take on a whole new look. But while the lore of glass bottles feature prominently in Howard's installations, as she points out, home is not always what we think it is.
Home is not always safe. Some of the most tragic things happen in the home.
In 2005, Howard made a piece called Safe House.
Safe House is a house that I did for the opening of the Museum of the African Diaspora. And the frame of the house is made with knives.
It's an open house, no walls. And inside the house, there's a slew of silver objects that you might see on display, maybe in a cabinet or a fancy dinnerware set that you never use.
Silver objects. A lot of the silver objects. The companies that made silver objects also made shackles that were on Africans who came here to the, quote, New World.
Some of the silver items are crushed, others are intact.
And then there's a trail that leads of these objects that lead to a wall. And in the wall are these, I guess, maybe 120 knives that I stuck in the wall.
Home can oftentimes be a very fraught place. Sometimes a place of protection, other times a place of danger. The very meaning of home itself is unsettled. Are we talking about a house, the home that you make in that house, or even a homeland? What is home? Who gets to belong and who gets shut out?
What's happening in the San Francisco Bay Area, the number of homeless people is just astronomical.
One of Howard's most recent projects is called Print Public.
We do pass by these people as if they don't exist. And that led me to this new body of work that I began doing.
For Print Public, Howard set out with her camera to meet and photograph people living on the street along San Pablo Avenue in the East Bay. Her work asks us to look closer. It invites us to notice, to question. What does it mean to be visible? And what does it mean to be invisible?
I like to address what is not there. And as Ralph Ellison says, just because you don't see it, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Protesters clashed with police again in the state of Guerrero, where the 43 students disappeared 6 weeks ago. Many fear the students have been murdered.
In September of 2014, 43 Mexican college students went missing from the city of Iguala. They were on their way to Mexico City when their buses were ambushed in the middle of the night. The students haven't been seen since.
I remember the first time I came across the news where people in Facebook were beginning to put their profile picture black as a way of doing luto, which is to mourn. But I think in this case, the entire country was in mourning after hearing that these 43 students had all of a sudden been obliterated.
Wanting to do a protest of her own, Mexican-born painter and performance artist Ana Teresa Fernandez began by blacking out a corner in her studio. Wearing a black dress and black shoes, she then proceeded to erase herself.
So from the dress, I started painting out my arms. So wearing the blackness of sleeves and then painting out my legs and then continuing to paint out my face until I entirely painted myself out black.
This act, together with paintings, a larger-than-life sculpture, a text installation, and a video, comprise an exhibit Fernandez called Erasure.
As I was waiting for the painting to dry, you feel like how it's drying and it's constraining against your skin, and it just tightens. And I just, there was this feeling of a little bit of suffocation, just of wearing that blackness as I sat there in the black space. So it's really talking about the injustices of what, who has value and why, and who's allowed to live and who gets erased so quickly and easily.
It's a silent protest, a quiet strength behind a loud statement, a form of resistance that she learned from her mother.
She's just like a lot of light and a lot of like warmth and stubbornness all packed in one, you know. I think my mother was always very rebellious silently. And I think I took that type of voice, that silent rebellion, and I've been applying it in my work ever since.
That silent rebellion is evident in Fernandez's 2012 piece, Borrando la Frontera, a public art piece that she did at the physical border that separates Tijuana and San Diego.
This physical fence is actually, they're train tracks that are welded together, that are perforated into the sand, and so they stand vertically up into the sky, and they run across the sand all the way into the ocean. And this is the object that is the symbol as the wall, you know, and has been for over a decade now. And so what it looks like, it's like Mexico is behind prison bars.
But this border didn't always look like this. In 1971, then First Lady Pat Nixon visited the border between Tijuana and San Diego. Back then, it was just a flimsy chain-linked fence. She was there for the dedication of Friendship Park, a patch of land made to celebrate the relationship between Mexico and the United States. Friendship Park eventually became a much beloved space for people who were separated by the border.
Families actually could come and meet on Sundays there, and through the bars were able to have meals and share stories and spend hours together just congregating.
People would come to Friendship Park to reunite. They'd bring their beach chairs and sit, they'd catch up with each other, and through the fence, they'd talk, they'd laugh, they'd look at each other's faces, they'd touch hands, and recount the time that they've spent apart. Yes, over time, the chain-link fence evolved into the high steel beams of today, but the park offered a moment where the separation of the border could be transcended. Until, that is, in 2009, when the park closed its doors for the construction of additional border fences. And that changed everything.
People were no longer able to touch. So there were these meshes that got implemented between those posts, and people can only touch through their fingertips across these really thick metal meshes. And when you see that, it is just absolutely heartbreaking. I mean, you don't know what it's like until you actually witness it. And you see grandparents that go see their grandchildren and they have to see them through these, you know, layers of fence and physical obstructions, and how they're crying. All they want to do is touch each other and reach across and be able to have a connection, you know? And I think that when I saw that, that was what tipped me over the edge. And I was like, like, I need to do something about this. And, you know, you want to kick and scream at it and spit at it and come with like a torch and like burn the whole thing down.
But paint is the weapon of choice for Fernandez. And one morning, she went to the border with her mother, a videographer, and cans of paint. And she began painting the wall out of existence. She created a blue that perfectly matched the color of the sky and then painted the wall with this blue until essentially the wall vanished.
That was me trying to visualize a different possibility of what if this place didn't have a wall? What would it look like? What would it feel like?
People would walk by the wall, and as Fernandez was erasing it, they'd cheer, "I get it! I get it!" In painting out the wall, she wasn't simply omitting something. Fernandez was creating something new, a new landscape, a new vision of what could be. It was for her own imagination, but also for those around her.
When we live out our possibilities, like the fullness of what's possible for us, I think that we experience the beauty of the lightness of being, you know, where we're almost floating. When we have that epiphany, when we're in the moment of creation, it's like we don't experience gravity, but instead like the fullness of what we're capable of, you know, because I think if anything, that's always the big question of like, who are you going to be in this world, you know, and how much access do you have to that?
You just heard episode 3 of the second season of Raw Material, a podcast produced by the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art and radio producer Geraldine Asu. And Geraldine, you're joining me in the studio right now, this very moment in KLW. Hey.
Hey.
Thank you so much for coming on and talking a bit about what it's been like to put this season of the podcast together. I'd love to hear more about the theme that shaped the work that you did putting these episodes together.
So this season, we're talking about art, community, and social justice. I think, you know, this is something that's on a lot of people's minds today. Sort of the political climate is what it is. And it's exciting. I mean, there's a lot of movement and there's a lot of action and there's a lot of recommitment and a lot of envisioning for sort of what we want and realizing some of the things that we don't want. So I think that's a little bit about how the theme for the second season came about. And it's really exciting work to be part of, especially in the creation process of sort of being part of creating a conversation or being part of a larger conversation and inviting artists to be part of it.
And those artists that you're bringing on in this season, what was the process like brainstorming who you would want to talk to and why? Did you focus mostly on like local artists?
So the podcast is produced by the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. So we've got a lot of good people thinking about artists.
A lot of sway too with artists.
Well, I think that's also, it's also been really fun just talking with some of the folks at the museum. So I work with the in-house producer, Aaron Fleming, and Erica Gangsi and Stephanie Powell. You know, we get to have sort of these weekly conversations where we literally get to dream up, like, who do we want in this conversation? Who do we want in this episode? And everybody sort of comes from, you know, lots of different knowledge bases and areas of interest. I definitely talked to a lot of friends and thought about sort of, you know, who are the people who excite you. For me, my personal interest in art, I really like textile art. I really like things that you can touch, things that you can like access in different ways besides visual, which is really, really different than the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. But that's what was so exciting about it, about the theme of the season, thinking about what is art and social justice? You know, how do those things connect and who is making art and why are they making it and what does that art mean? Really thinking about all the different mediums too that people are working in and how that is speaking to creating a world that we want to see. One of the things that's been super great about working on this season of Raw Material when we're talking about art, community, and social justice is really getting a chance to highlight people of color and women artists and sort of, you know, this is like our platform. So, you know, bringing them to the front and showcasing their work and all of the fantastic things that are happening.
And that's one of the things I really appreciate about Raw Material, because there are a lot of art podcasts around. And there are ones that focus on local artists, which is great. But like, I like this one so much because it's got SF MoMA's kind of sticker on it, but yet I'm hearing artists that I wouldn't see their work generally in SF MoMA, a lot of them. And also the podcast, especially the season, goes into a lot of performance art, which is great radio to listen to. And that's something, yeah, I've just really appreciated just the amount of artists, not only who are local, but this artist I haven't heard of. Or at least if I've seen their work, I haven't actually heard their voices speak about their work. That must feel really good for you.
That feels really great for me, especially as a woman of color myself. Getting a chance to make stories and, you know, push stories forward from people who look like me or have similar experiences as me or different, different than what I'm normally hearing. That's really exciting.
How many episodes are going to be in this season?
So there's 6 episodes in the season, and you just heard the 3rd one.
And what is in store for us?
I'm really excited for what's to come. The 4th episode, we're talking about different ways of seeing and different ways of being seen. Legacy and the things that we inherit is also something that is constantly on my mind, and especially sort of today, just thinking about, you know, how did we get here? You know, how far have we come and where are we going next? So that's a question that's been on my mind, and we get to explore it a little bit in episode 5.
And then episode 6, which is sort of our grand finale. Pew, 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 pew. Pew, 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 pew,
pew. It's fireworks. Sorry.
Pew, pew. Yeah, episode 6, I mean, you know, what is one of the most beautiful and, like, most important things about sort of, you know, the work that we do for justice and liberation is each other, is community. And so I really wanted to make sure that that was part of what we're talking about. Things are bleak, right? But what's really incredible is that even in the bleak times, there's so much love that thrives between people. The tiny acts of ways that we care for each other, that we continue to care for each other. And that's sort of the thing that really, I think, ultimately pulls us through. So the 6th episode, it's a celebration of all of us. It's, you know, we're alive and it's awesome. I feel really lucky and so thankful for all the artists who have participated in the series. They invite me into their home and their studio. I sit on the couch with them. I stick a microphone in their face and I ask really personal questions. And I don't know them at all. And it's just so refreshing and lovely and reassuring, I think, to know that we're still sharing with each other and that we want to and that it's welcome. Like, that's beautiful to me.
I always want to ask, what are the podcasts or radio stories or radio makers that you're just into right now and want to give a shout out to? Do you have anyone to talk about or shows or?
The thing that I'm listening to that's like really I'm thinking about for days and days and days is the current season of The Heart, their No series. It follows Caitlin Prest, who's the host, and how she learned how to say no. And I just, it's amazing. It's just amazing because it's not, I mean, it's about sexual consent in a lot of ways, but in the first episode, you know, it's really, the thing that resonated with me was sort of this experience of being a woman and having to actually learn and practice saying no, that fundamental thing. And it's just, it's mind-blowing, you know, when you're paused to think about it. And it's an experience that I really related to when I was listening to, so I've really been enjoying that one.
That's a great recommendation. Also, I've listened to the same episode of the series, the first episode. There's just a lot of layers to what they're doing, I think, in this season, which I'm pretty stoked on. Geraldine, yes. Thank you so much for coming into the studio to talk nerdy radio talk with me. And for everyone listening to The Spot, thank you.
Thanks for having me, Ashley Ann.
And you listening out there can download Raw Materials' new season by going to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, all the places, right, Geraldine?
All the places, anywhere you listen to podcasts.
And yeah. Is there a URL that you want to direct people to if they want to go to an old-fashioned website to listen?
Sure, yeah. So you can check out sfmoma.org/raw-material. There you'll find all the episodes as well as additional sort of addendum articles where if you're curious about an artist and some of the stuff that they're doing or something that we referenced, you can find it there too.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's it for today's episode of The Spot. You can find this episode and more at kalw.org. Look for The Spot under the Programs tab. If there's a podcast you recommend all of us to check out, tell me about it. Email thespot@kalw.org. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum, and thanks for listening. Tune in next week, same day, same time, for another episode of The Spot, only on 91.7 KALW.